nanohub.org. You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Enjoy the show.
Today we'll continue our discussion from last two lectures. And as you know, what we are trying to do is develop this general model, this general approach that you can use to calculate the current through any device, taking quantum effects into account. And what we are talking about at this time, I'd call it coherent transport. Coherent transport in the sense that it's assumed that the electron goes from one contact to another without interacting with the surroundings, just goes dynamically according to Schrodinger equation. And that's a good description of many small devices, though there are these other what are called phase-breaking processes that have to be included, and we'll talk about that later, like in a next lecture or the lecture after that. But at this time, what we are talking about is what you'd call coherent transport. And as I said, in general, doesn't matter how complicated the device is, what material we are talking about, the basic input you need is, one is this Hamiltonian, the H, whose eigenvalues give you all the energy levels. And from this, you can calculate density of states and things like that. That tells you basically how many lanes on your highway, how fast you go, etc. And then there is this connection to the contacts. That's the sigma 1 and sigma 2. This is a Hermitian matrix whose eigenvalues are all real. These are non-Hermitian matrices. They are complex things with whose eigenvalues are complex in general. And if you look at the imaginary part of it, or I guess what you more correctly, the anti-Hermitian part of it, that's what's called the broadening. That's really what tells you how easily electrons come in and out. And if sigma were Hermitian, this would have been zero. Then you'd really have a closed system. It's this anti-Hermitian part that brings in this open system character to the thing. And what I discussed last day was with a simple example, like where we had a 1D wire. What I showed was how you could start from a general Schrodinger equation looking like this. So this would be the usual Schrodinger equation you'd see that people use normally, where what you do is try to find the eigenvalues of H. And the idea is that if the energy does not match one of those eigenvalues, you do not have any non-trivial solutions. That's the usual approach. What we are talking about is an open system, and what I tried to show last day with a simple example is how you could start from the Schrodinger equation for the whole big thing, including contacts, and eliminate the contacts, and thereafter, you're left with something that looks like this. A sigma and a source term. And now E really does not have to match any of the eigenvalues of H necessarily. E is an independent variable. It represents the energy with which the electron comes in from your contact. And whether it is able to get through your device or not, well, if it matches one of the eigenvalues, it might get through easily. If not, but this equation will then describe that if you have a source with a given energy, an electron coming in with a given energy, how much of a wave function would be excited as a result, etc. So this would be the equation that would describe it. And last day, we went through a simple example to show how you get the sigma and the S. I think next day, I'll do a more general version of it. Because as I said, the basic form of the equation applies no matter how complicated your device, how complicated your contact. And as I said before, in a way, it's like as long as you had an isolated system, it was sort of like an LC circuit, a resonance. LC circuit or a guitar string, any resonant system, which has certain resonant frequencies. And now you're connecting it to these contacts, which then give you some source resistance, and that's like this one. That's at least the anti-Hermitian part of that one is the is like a source resistance. It also has, could have a Hermitian part, which basically kind of shifts your resonant frequency somewhat. It is like just changes the H a little bit. But it's the anti-Hermitian part that's like the resistance. And then there's the source, of course, which is like the actual voltage source with which you're driving it. And the frequency of this does not have to match the resonant frequency of that. You could drive it at any frequency you want. So physically, it's good to keep this general thing clear. Okay. Now, what I want to do today is go on to the next step, and that is we talk about where these equations come from, and especially this G with a super N. This is what's called the correlation function. And once you have this, you can calculate electron density, current, anything of interest, really. All the information is right here. So in any problem, this is what you really want to calculate. So this is where we are headed. And the tricky part is this, that, as I mentioned before, that you think that, well, just as if you take a course in electromagnetics, the starting point for everything is usually Maxwell's equation. And in a way, here, the equivalent thing is Schrodinger equation. You know, just as photons obey Maxwell's equation, you have electrons obeying Schrodinger equation. But the difference is that usually when you take a course in electromagnetics, you're talking of coherent waves, where if you have multiple sources, they can interfere, they add, etc. That's what you're usually talking about. Whereas here, these electron waves from different sources are all incoherent. Incoherent in the sense they have no definite phase relationship at all. So if you have some source term coming in from here, some source term coming in from here, the thing is, they do not have any definite phase relationship. It's not as if they're in phase or out of phase. And if you just add both of them in here without thinking about it, like you put in S1 plus S2, for example, with multiple contacts, then you'll get interferences that are really not real. I mean, you won't see it in any experiment. Okay? And so, when you're applying this, the important thing is what you add is not the size from different sources, but it's the psi star size. And that's what this quantity is, the Gn, this correlation function. The way it relates to that wave function is it's like psi psi dagger. So the way you define it is something like this. So, you know, the way you think of psi is it's like a column vector, psi 1, psi 2, etc. In fact, for this discussion, let's just stick to 2 points. So it's like psi 1, psi 2. So if you have a device with 2 points, 2 grid points, then psi will have 2 components, psi 1 and psi 2. Now, if you define something called psi psi dagger, what will it look like? Well, that's psi, and then psi dagger will be can you help me? Firstly, is it a column vector or a row vector? Row vector, right? Psi dagger means conjugate transpose. And this is 2 by 1. Psi dagger is 1 by 2. And you take the conjugate, of course. Now, if I multiply the two, what do I get? A number or a matrix? Matrix. It would be a number if I had actually reversed it. If you had taken psi dagger psi, it would have been a number. Why? Because the way you think about it is rules of matrix multiplication is 2 by 1, you're multiplying with a 1 by 2, and so at the end of the day, you get a 2 by 2. If you had turned it around, you'd be multiplying 1 by 2 with a 2 by 1, and then you'd get a 1 by 1, which would be a number. Right? Okay. So there is this very subtle difference between psi-psi dagger and psi-dagger psi. This way, right? Okay. So this is the quantity, then, that you are defining as this correlation function, Gn. This is the thing you're talking about. It's a matrix whose size is the same as your Hamiltonian H matrix or any other matrices in this discussion. It's the same size. So if you have 2 points, it'll be a 2 by 2. N points, N by N. And the elements of that matrix then will look something like because when I'm multiplying it out, if I want the 1-1 component, I take this, multiply it. You know, the rule is you multiply rows into columns. So there's only one thing there, so you just multiply that. Or when I want the 1-2 element, I multiply this with that, this with that, and then this with that. And that's how you'd get them. So that's what your Gn would look like. Now, if you look at the diagonal elements, you see what it is. It tells you the probability of finding an electron at site 1 or site 2. So this is like what will give you the electron density. After you've added them all up from all the sources, that's what gives you the electron density at a point. These off-diagonal things, those are like things that don't have a simple physical interpretation. As we'll see, actually, when you calculate current, for example, this is important. So it has additional useful information, and I'll try to explain why. But in general, then, when you're using these equations, you're ending up with this matrix. And if you just want the electron density, you look at the diagonal element. You can just ignore the off-diagonal stuff if you don't need it. Right? But there are things where you actually need it, and we'll talk more about that. Okay. So that's this GM. So let's just keep that in mind then, the Gn, maybe I'll write that somewhere, yeah, maybe I'll just write that up here, okay, this is fine, so I'll just write it up here. Okay. So this is the equation then that gives me psi for a given S. And then what I really want is the psi psi dagger, because that's the quantity that I can superpose when I have tens of different sources. So from here I first get psi, and you can see that the way I'd get psi is by multiplying from the left with the inverse of this matrix, which is what is called the Green's function. I think the technical name is the retarded Green's function. So the psi is equal to Gs. So this is a matrix. This is this S column vector. And if you multiply it, you get the wave function. Psi equals Gs. And this is like what you might call the impulse response of the system. That here's the system. When you hit it with a certain source, what response do you get? In a way, that's the response function of the system, but includes the contacts. Okay. That's psi equals Gs. So if I want Gn, yes.
Please.
Oh.
That's just a transfer function.
Right. So.
So it's not impulse, then it doesn't give you a transfer function.
Right. I guess the way I would, yeah, good point. The way I think about it is, okay, so here's the Green's function. So let's say I got 2 points. And so I got this. Now, if I hit it with a source at point 1 only and nothing at point 2, then what I'll get is this column. So in a way, this column tells me what response I get when I hit it with a unit source at point 1. Second column tells me what I get when I hit it with a unit source at point 2, etc. So it is a response to this. Okay? That's the way I'm thinking. Okay. Now, since psi equals Gs, now what I want is this psi psi dagger. So Gn is equal to, so psi is Gs, and psi dagger will be, see, when you have, I want the dagger of this, right? The conjugate transpose of this. How do you write that? When you have a product of two matrices, AB dagger, you know, transpose, you have to reverse it and then take daggers again, right? So it will have something like this, S dagger and then G dagger, right? So overall, it will be like this. So that's the psi dagger.
Okay.
So this is the quantity then. You know, just as you took psi dagger, that's like electron density. If you look at the source term and source dagger, multiply it, that's kind of tells you about the strength of the source. That's okay. So this is what I'll call, again, the sigma in. In the sense, this is what tells you the input. That's the source from various places. That's the sigma in. And that's what this equation is, you see. Gn is equal to G sigma in G dagger. Sigma in is the strength of the source. That's it. Okay. Now, the part that needs a little discussion, and this is where the example we saw last day, you can look back, is what is the strength of the source? And there you see we have two parts to the source, one that comes from contact one, one that comes from contact two. And again, there's no coherence between them, so whatever you get from contact one, that SS dagger, you add to what you get from contact two. And what we showed last day was that the strength of the source coming in from contact one was given by gamma 1 F1, that it depends on the Fermi function in contact one, as you might expect, because if there's no electrons in there at that energy, you don't expect any sources. So it's proportional to the Fermi function, but it's also proportional to gamma 1. What that means is, you know, gamma is a measure of how strongly coupled this contact is to your device. So if gamma is large, electrons can get out easily, but similarly, they can also come in easily. So the source term is proportional to the gamma, although the gamma itself only tells you how easily it gets out. It's this imaginary part of this, which is like the resistance, the part that tells you how easily it gets out. But then, if it gets out easily, the strength of the source is also bigger. And that's what we saw, if you look back at your notes from last day, in that simple example, we deduced the strength of the source. And if you look back, you'll see it was like gamma times F. So contact 1 gives you gamma 1 F1. Contact 2 gives you gamma 2 F2. If you had a device with 10 contacts, there would be a sum of all this. There would be a gamma 3 F3 and a gamma 4 F4 and so on. You'd add them all up. That's it. Okay? So that's then the equation for this. Okay. Now, one thing I wanted to go through next is a very, very useful quantity called the spectral function. Because usually with all these quantum calculations, of course, all device calculations, the quantity of most interest usually is current and electron density. But there's another thing that's also of great interest, and that's the density of states. And this A, is just as Gn, if you look at its diagonal elements, it gives you the electron density. Similarly, if you take this A, called the spectral function, and if you look at its diagonal elements, it will give you the density of states. So, and the density of states is of particular importance because it's one of those things that can be directly measured. Because in all of this, you see, you're always, when you calculate something, you want to compare with experiment. So anything that is directly measurable, that's always of great interest. Because that's where you can really check whether what you're calculating has any connection with reality. And density of states is one of those because, you know, one of the most important developments in nanoscience is this scanning tunneling microscope. And the idea there is on any surface, you can bring down a little probe, get really close to the surface and measure the current and then move it around. Move it around with atomic resolution. And then the places where the density of states is high, you get a lot of current. Places where the density of states is low, you get less current. And so what you do is just map out the current, and that basically tells you what the density of states looks like. So all these beautiful STM images finally is like a map of the density of states on the surface, which around the atoms is different from what it is between the atoms. And so then you can look at that picture and say, okay, that looks like one of the atoms, that looks like another atom, etc. Okay? So the point here, though, in this context is just that density of states is a very important thing because it's directly measurable, just as current is very important because that's, again, one of those things you measure directly. Okay. Whereas other things like, say, Green's function, that you are not able to measure directly, not in any simple way, usually. Okay? Maybe indirectly. Okay. Now, one way to get the this spectral function is from the electron density itself. And that's what I'll do now. Although, you know, you'll see later that this actually could have been interpreted more directly. But right now what I want to show is that if I start from here, this electron density, Gn, is equal to G gamma 1 F1 plus gamma 2 F2 times G dagger. Okay, so this is the electron density. Now, what I'll argue is that if I want the density of states, that means the total number of states available, what I could do is put F1 equal to 1 and F2 also equal to 1. So what I mean by that is if both contacts are such that they're all completely full, then, of course, inside, it ought to be also completely full, steady state, yeah. As long as everything that, you know, all the sources are completely full. Under current flow conditions, of course, F1 has to be different from F2. Because as we have stated, the only reason current flows is because the two contacts have two different Fermi functions. Right? That's why one wants to fill it up, one doesn't, etc. But if I'm trying to figure out what is the total number of states available, what I could say is consider the situation where no current flows, but both Fs are equal to 1. So it's all filled. So the electron density inside then is actually equal to the total number of states. So if I put F1 and F2 equal to 1, you'll see what you get is G gamma 1 plus gamma 2 G dagger. And this is then what I'd call A. That's the density of states. Okay. And what I want to do for the next 5 minutes or so is a little bit of matrix algebra to show you that that quantity is the same as what I've written here, which is a little simpler because, you know, if you actually had to evaluate A, you'd rather use this than that. You know, once you have G, it's just G minus G dagger, there you are. Why multiply three matrices? So what I want to show you next is that that is actually equal to this. Okay? And that takes a bit of matrix algebra. So now the way we'll do it is we start from the idea that G is equal to EI minus H minus sigma inverse. That's the definition of the Green's function. We had that before. So what I can do is put an inverse here and take that out. Okay. Next, what I'll do is I'll write the conjugate transpose of this. That's this dagger of what I have there. So it'll look like this. G dagger inverse is equal to, and I'm taking the conjugate transpose of that. EI is, of course, just a number. Nothing changes. H, when I take its conjugate transpose, it's Hermitian, so it's really the same thing back again. So this is also H. And this, instead of sigma, then becomes sigma dagger. Because sigma, as I've mentioned before, is not Hermitian. When you take its conjugate transpose, you get something else. Okay. Now, there's one little thing I glossed over that needs some that you'd have to think through, and that is, when I take the conjugate transpose of this, what I really get is G inverse dagger. And it takes a little bit of convincing to show yourself that G inverse dagger is the same as G dagger inverse. Okay? So I'm glossing over that point. Okay. That's it. Okay. So the next, what I'll do is, I'll subtract this from this. So what we get is G dagger inverse minus G inverse is equal to Can you help me what I get on the right hand side? Sigma minus sigma dagger. Right. Let me write this thing up here. This is what I'm really trying to prove. And here you have this gamma 1 plus gamma 2. So the sum of that, that's what I write as gamma. Just as when I write here sigma, I mean sigma 1 plus sigma 2. There's two of them there. So that's really sigma 1 plus sigma 2. Okay. Anyway, so let me write that up here. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is multiply from the left with a G and multiply from the right with a G dagger. So both sides. Not that G only applies to this side. G applies to both sides. G dagger also applies to both sides. So can you help me with what I'd get on the left-hand side? So take this thing. Every term gets multiplied from the left with a G and from the right with a G dagger. So this, when I multiply from the right with a G dagger, just becomes I. And then times G means just a G. Right? So can you help me with the second term? Just G dagger. Because now the G and the G inverse, that just becomes an I. And then you got the G dagger coming from the right. And on that side, what I get is G sigma minus sigma dagger, G dagger. Okay. Make sure you're comfortable with this, what I did here. Right. So first I start from here, wrote its conjugate transpose, subtracted. Then every term I multiply from the left with a G and I multiply from the right with a G dagger. That's it. Now, remember, what I was trying to prove is that A, which is G gamma G dagger, is also equal to I times G minus G dagger. So what I was really trying to prove is this is equal to that. That's what I'm really trying to do. Now, am I there or almost there, you can see? Because all I now have to do is put in an I here. And the I there. Because I times G minus G dagger then will become A. And I times sigma minus sigma dagger will then become the gamma. And you'd be done. So that's the proof. That's it. Now, one interesting thing that's sometimes useful, let me just mention, is that I multiplied from the left with a G and from the right with a G dagger. But I could have done the other way around too. I could have multiplied from the left with a G dagger and multiplied from the right with a G. Do you see what you'd get then if I did that? I think what you'd find is the left-hand side would still come out the same. On the right-hand side, instead of having G gamma G dagger, you'd have got G dagger gamma G. That's all. So the overall identity is something like this. That's all. Okay? Okay, so broadly where we are then is, it started from Schrodinger equation, showed that because of the connection to the contacts, you pick up a sigma, you pick up a source. Hence, there's this response function or this Green's function. And then you can define a correlation function Gn, which is like psi psi dagger, and it will be related to the strength of the source through this equation. And the diagonal elements of this will give you all the electron densities. And if you want density of states, well, put F1 equals 1, F2 equals 1, then it becomes G gamma G dagger, but which is also equal to IG minus G dagger. So that's it. That's all. Okay? So what I want to talk about next is, after this, is how you calculate currents. Okay? That one is a little tricky. I'm going to go into that. Okay. So this equation, let me write it a little differently. I mean, it's basically the same thing. Write it as E psi equals H psi. That's the usual Schrodinger equation. And now because of the contacts, we have picked up these two extra things. This is the source term that leads to some inflow. This is the sigma psi, that's kind of the damping term, that's the outflow, etc. So that's the overall thing. So this is the same as that. It's just that from this form, it's a little easier to do what you want to talk about. Now with current, the reason things are a little tricky is that it's what we are interested in is the steady state flow. And with current though, it's hard to visualize what we are talking about without bringing in time. See, for steady state flow, usually we use this time independent Schrodinger equation. That's one. But as I've mentioned before, there is an equivalent sort of time dependent version that you could have written, which would have looked something like this. So let's say this quantity. For the moment, let me give this whole thing a big name, phi, whatever that is. You know, you got three things to it, we'll deal with it separately. But I'm trying to say that, in general, there is a time-dependent version like this. And if you had to describe what is current, what you should be looking at is, what is the rate at which the electron density is changing at some point? So just as we had this Gn, we defined a Gn, which was like psi psi dagger. If I want current, I should be looking at something like d dt of psi psi dagger. That's what would be something like the current. What is the rate at which that thing is changing? Right? And if you did that, let me just write this up here. So these two are kind of the same thing. And the phi has these three parts, h psi plus sigma psi plus s. And we'll come back to that. So if I want d dt of psi psi dagger, question is how do we do it? So product rule. So what you do is first look at I h bar d dt of psi times psi dagger plus psi times I h bar d psi dagger dt. That's what you'd do. Now, I have I h bar d psi dt. That's what I'd call this phi. Now, what I need is I h bar d psi dagger dt, and we'll be done. So, any thoughts on what I h bar d psi dagger dt should be? What I'm going to do is take the conjugate transpose of that. So d psi dt becomes d psi dagger dt. Anything else I need to do on the left? When I take conjugate transpose? Minus I. So I h bar d psi dagger dt is like minus phi dagger. That's all. So overall, you see, the quantity I'm trying to find is what is d dt of psi psi dagger. That's what I really like to interpret as current. And What we get is then phi psi dagger minus, can you help me? So I'm trying to write this quantity. So it's phi psi dagger and then minus psi phi dagger, just the opposite, right? Anything else that I need to do? I need to divide by IH bar because I'm really looking for this quantity. Right? So I have to divide by IH bar. So that is the quantity then. And of course, phi has all these three terms and we'll talk about it one by one. But that is the quantity that you'd kind of think of like the current. That's the matrix whose diagonal elements hopefully should give you something like the current at one point, except that it's a little more tricky, and that's what I want to explain. Okay? But I hope you, you know, want to make sure you see the algebra. That is, usually we are always working with the time-independent one, but if you go to the corresponding time-dependent one, because remember, the way you get from here to here is, the idea is that as long as you're working with electrons at a fixed energy, all wave functions will look like e to the power minus I e t over h bar. And then I h bar d dt of that is the same as multiplying by e. That's the general argument of doing the steady state thing. So it's all that, as if it's, if you're thinking in terms of light, it's as if you've just got a single frequency. Now, the tricky point is something like this, that if you look at this and you think of a single electrons at a single energy, whatever you calculate there, you really expect it to be zero. Why is that? Well, because I said that, you know, this is like exponential minus I e t over h bar. This one is like exponential, when I take dagger, will become plus I e t over h bar. And that's the only time dependence in all of this. So when I multiply the two, it really doesn't depend on time. And so, if you took these quantities and just honestly calculated it, the thing is you would get zero. So it doesn't look like you're getting anything useful out of this. That's the thing, right? And what I want to explain is that the way you usually apply it is something more like this. That let's say we go back to our 1D problem. So, yeah, you know, the problem that we started with. So if you actually calculate that quantity at any point, so you have a bunch of points like this, and you go at some point and you actually calculate that quantity that I've written there at that point, you'd get zero. And the reason is that at steady state, what really happens is a current flows from here and the equivalent amount flows out there. And so dN dt at that point is zero, but it's equal to the current on the left minus the current on the right. Okay. So the thing is that that quantity I've written there, what you have to do is look at it and then try to figure out, it will have two terms in it, one of which is like what is on the left, one of which is like what is on the right. And if you looked at any one of them, it would give you the current. That's the thing. Whereas if you just blindly calculate that, you'll just get zero. It will be the difference between these two. You won't get anything really. That's the thing. That's the tricky point with this. Okay. So this lets me explain, go through a little example, and you'll see how that works. So the result I need is this one. So what I wrote was this I operator. I just put an operator here in the sense that what you're calculating there is a matrix. Whereas when we say I, we want to think of a number like 1 milliamp or something. So just as a reminder that this is like current, but then it's really a matrix. And you have to look at its specific elements and so on. So let's take the simplest case, namely, when this first term. That's the usual Schrodinger equation. You know, E psi equals H psi. You know, this came because we worried about contacts, put all that in. That's how we picked up all the rest of it. But for the moment, let's just think of just the ordinary Schrodinger equation. That means the phi there is just H psi. So let's write that in. So what will the denominator be? It'll be like H psi psi dagger. Instead of phi f, put H psi. Can you help me with the second one? Now I need, you know, phi is H psi. So if I want phi dagger, it'll be psi dagger, H dagger, but then H is usually Hermitian, so H dagger is just H. So I'll just leave it at H. So what you get then is psi, psi dagger, H. And this is what we have generally called Gn. So if we just had a Schrodinger equation with no currents in it or anything, with no contacts to it, so we have not yet worried about those terms, no contacts, then the current operator would look like HGN minus GNH divided by IH bar. But the point I'm saying is, if you just honestly solve these equations, you're given some H, etc., find GN, then ask MATLAB to calculate HGN minus GNH, you'd just get zero. For the reasons I explained. If you have done the calculation correctly, that should just be plain zero, won't give you anything useful. Okay. Now, so let's look at what you get. So this is a matrix. So supposing I want the current at a particular point. Let's say A. I want to know what it is at a particular point. So then what I should do is I should take that operator, look at its AA element, because that's a matrix. You know, just as with GN, if you wanted electron density at point A, you just go in, look at GN at the point A, AA element, the diagonal elements. Same here. If you want to know the current at point A, look at how GN AA is changing, essentially. So you look at that. So if you looked at I operator, just AA element. So I'm just looking at the A comma A element. What will you get? Well, these are matrices that are multiplied like this. So you'll get something like HAB GN BA sum over B. This is just the rule for multiplying matrices. Right? ABBA. And you write minus GNABHBA. And divided by IH bar, of course. That's understood. So all I did was, we had the general matrix version here, and I wrote its AA element, a particular diagonal element at a particular point, and it looks like that. So how many terms will I have if I write, you know, that summation over B? If I were to write it out, how many terms would we have? You know, I'm standing at a point A. I've got to do this matrix multiplication. So B could be either this point, or that point. Now, anything outside that will give me zero because HAB is non-zero only for the diagonal, only for the nearest neighbors. So because of that, you really don't need anything beyond that. So you'd actually just have three terms. Now, what would be the three terms? Let's write that out. So firstly, what I claim is, if you write B equal to A, it really doesn't matter much because what you get is zero. Do you see that? Because if B is A, then you see those two terms are the same. You don't get anything out of it. So what you really have is two terms, one because of B equals A plus 1, one because of B equals A minus 1. So the A plus 1 term will look like this. HAA plus 1, which is, I think we took as minus T, That was HA A plus 1, and then GN A plus 1, comma A minus GN A comma A plus 1, and now there's a T there. Over I H bar. And then I can write another one. So what I did is, the summation over B, I'm supposed to have three terms, A minus 1, A plus 1, A. Now, when B is equal to A, just out, 0. So I have two terms now. One is when B equals A plus 1, and one is when B equals A minus 1. And H, A, A plus 1, or H, A, A minus 1, either of them is minus T. So I just put that in there. That's it. Yes. Of the current operator itself. No, not directly, but just as with the GN, that's something that needs a little more extensive discussion. So the real physical thing at this time, let's assume, is really the diagonal element. But one thing you note here is that although I'm calculating the diagonal element of the current, it actually involves the off-diagonal element of the correlation function. So if you were wondering why do I need the off-diagonal element of GN, well, this is one place where it could be useful. Okay?
There's a mistake. It should be A minus 1, A minus A, A minus 1.
A minus 1. Thank you. Okay. Now, again, as I mentioned before, if you had actually just calculated, if you just calculated this honestly, that answer is 0. Because it's really just telling you d dt of at that point. And we are, and as I said, as long as all these solutions have this exponential minus I e t over h bar, things like psi dagger have no time dependence at all. And so it has no d dt. It's a steady state solution. So this is really 0. It is just that if you look at this guy or at this guy separately, it will give you the current. This is like the current that is going from A to A plus 1. That's like the current that is going from A minus 1 to A. Right? So either one of them would give you the current. You could look at whichever you want. But if you just took it all, then it wouldn't give you much. So one way to do that is, you see, the expression we had, if you remember, that for the current operator, expression we had was, in general, I think what I wrote is this phi psi dagger minus psi phi dagger over I h bar. And for the special, and just for the first term, what we ended up with was this. Did I write that in the correct order? Is it okay? Okay. And so, if phi is equal to h psi, then this becomes h g n minus g n h over I h bar. And what I was trying to show you is that if you look at the diagonal element of that, you get these two terms there, which can then be interpreted as one of them is giving you the current from the left, another is giving you the current from the right. But together it just amounts to 0 because it's steady state. There's no net current really. And so one way to do it would be, if you actually want to calculate the current, is take your H. You know, usually the H has these diagonal elements and has upper diagonal elements and these lower diagonal elements. Now, the diagonal elements of H, of course, don't give you anything as far as current goes. Just as we discussed, if you put B equal to A, that's not giving you anything. So these don't matter, really. You could as well put, you could put anything there, won't change your current. But these two are what are giving you those two terms. So if you want to calculate current, one way is create a special matrix out of the H which only has the upper diagonal but not the lower diagonal. And then if you calculate hgn minus gnh, you'd get only one of those terms. And that would then give you the current. Alternatively, you could create a matrix with only the lower diagonal, and that would also give you the current. But if you have both, you'd end up, you just multiply, end up with zero. Okay. So let me stop here today. What I'll do next day is, you know, what we just discussed is for this current operator, what you get if you just had the H psi, just the usual Schrodinger equation, and you want to interpret currents, what you do. What I'll talk about next day is these two additional terms that come from the contacts. Because often in a device, you may not really want to know the details of the current flow. That is, inside the device, where it is going, etc. You just want to know what comes in from the terminals. In that case, you can show that if you sum up this part over all the points, it will just go to zero. It doesn't contribute anything. If you just want terminal current, that really comes from these two terms. This tells you what comes in, and this tells you what goes out, essentially. But what we'll have to do is start from here. But for the phi, then, I'll use this part. And we'll see what current terms you get. So that's what we'll do on Friday.